We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Coming out of a regional weekend that might have been the most explosive, the most offensive, certainly the most head-jerking, filled with comebacks, filled with even a sliver of some good pitching. Kyle Schatzberger, David Kahn, and Michael Serber here with you on College Sports Now. And spoiler alert, we have most of the Super Regional field set, but we still have four games that we're monitoring as we come to you late on a Monday night. And that's because we all have places to be this week. I've got vacation. David Kahn is going on a work trip. Serber, I know you have something to do as well, but we prioritize, and that is college baseball. And Kahn, this has been one of the more fascinating regional weekends that I think I have ever been a part of, witnessed, experienced. I feel like I've been in 30 different places at one time, trying to monitor and track all the back and forth, all of the runs that have been scored. This has been an unreal weekend of college baseball, and hat tip right off the bat to ESPN and Squeeze Play. It has certainly helped. But for you, my man, how have you been able to keep up on what we have as we still are trying to fill out this super regional field?
Well, I took some super glue on Friday night and just glued it to my right hand, because that was the only way I was going to be able to keep up with anything going on this weekend. I have been feverishly flipping channel to channel, SEC Network, ESPN, ACC Network, Squeeze Play. I've been typing in all the different kinds of scoreboards. I've been pulling up stat broadcasts like a fiend. I mean, this has been a remarkable weekend. I'm currently just sitting here. I've got a seltzer popped open. I feel like I should be eating a bowl of popcorn, because this has been an absolute show of regional weekend here in 2022.
All right, good on you on the seltzer. I planned on that, knowing when we were going to record. I actually had an IPA that was earmarked for this very, very occasion. However, this has been a very wild and tumultuous day for your boy, where I went ahead and I got a lot of work done, but I also got a lot of other things done before my trip to Chicago, the Windy City, first thing in the morning. So I still have to pack. I haven't even done that, but I haven't showered yet. I've been to the gym twice, two-a-days, took care of laundry. I even made it to the driving range, car, which I didn't plan on. I just drove by it before heading to the gym for a second time. And, you know, with college baseball in my ear pods, Varsity Network app, you cannot go wrong there. Pulling up Squeeze Play, it was just like pure nirvana for me today. So don't be too jealous. But look, we've got 12 teams that have already punched their ticket to Super Regional weekend. Tennessee and Notre Dame, that was the first Super Regional that was configured as of, what, Sunday afternoon? Sunday evening, East Carolina winning over Coastal Carolina on Monday in a game 7. They will face Texas, who went 3-0 in the Austin Regional. That will be in Greenville. By the way, Notre Dame going to Tennessee. Texas A&M and Louisville. How about the Cardinals scoring 4 runs in the 8th inning to overcome a 2-run deficit against Michigan in a game 7? That Super Regional will be in College Station. Virginia Tech, we do know a Super will go through Blacksburg for the first time ever. They await the winner of Oklahoma and Florida. And as we live stream, or at least in our minds, as we podcast, this will not be live by the time it hits your feed. We do have Squeeze Play up. I do behind me. Kind of know it's in front of you as well. And it looks like Oklahoma, yes, has just pulled even with Florida. So that one's down to the wire. After a rain delay, Con, we'll pause here. I'll let you interject. That was the left side of the bracket as Virginia Tech awaits either Florida or Oklahoma in the Blacksburg Super Regional. During that rain delay, it was, what, almost 6 hours in the seventh inning between the Gators and Sooners. I was able to accomplish, what did I text you? I went to the gym. I went to the store. I went to the driving range. I did laundry. I mean, that was the longest rain delay, I think, of the weekend.
By far, 5 hours and 47 minutes, I believe, was the official rain delay time for Florida and Oklahoma. It was great on the broadcast. The play-by-play announcer for ESPN came on and said, well, you could have gone home and taken a nap, or you could have just taken a deep, deep sleep, because that rain delay was long. Thank God they're actually playing. They're going to finish this game tonight, it seems like, in Gainesville. And yeah, Oklahoma just hit a two-run bomb, I believe, to tie it up at three as we live podcast. So lengthy delay, but luckily, Shaz, there was so much other college baseball going on right now. I kind of forgot Florida and Oklahoma was still happening several times during that rain delay. And then all of a sudden I'm watching Squeeze Play and they say, oh, we're going to go to Florida, Oklahoma on ESPN News. I was like, oh, yeah, we got to finish that still. Okay. Now, of course, that game has a lot of meaning to us because that game is going to decide our pick 'em.
Oh, that is the determining factor. That's the domino that needs to fall to determine who wins the pick 'em from the weekend, from regional weekend.
Yes, that's it. We are currently at 7-6 each right now. I'm counting College Park as a loss for both of us because we both had Wake Forest. They are out. Sorry to the Deeks. We are waiting on two others, but we both picked Stanford to win their regional, and we both picked Oklahoma State to win Stillwater, so that won't affect the standings. You have Florida, I have Oklahoma, and it's tied at three, so we are five outs away on either side. 5 to 6 outs away on either side from figuring out who wins this.
What do we do in Wake Forest? I mean, Rhett Lauder really let us down on Friday night, did he not? Against Austin Peterson. I think he gave up 6 runs. He got absolutely shelled. It was awful. Peterson held his own, but then the UConn bullpen imploded. UConn took care of Wake Forest. Then who came out of the loser's bracket there? They beat Maryland, right? And then Maryland's had to come back here to force the game seven. And Maryland, yep. Speaking of live, of kind of following this as we podcast and bring you the first of two pods here this week ahead of Super Regional weekend, Maryland has come from behind here against UConn. I thought for a moment the Huskies were running away with things, but no, sir, Maryland is not dead yet. The 15 overall seed at home, the visitor against the UConn Huskies, and this is going to determine a lot, Con, in terms of we still have one more game that has to get started a little bit later tonight, and that is going to be Texas State and Stanford. So let me just roll through the right side of the bracket real quick. That Stanford region, the Cardinal, the number two overall seed, they've had to come out of the loser's bracket. They forced a game seven with a win over Texas State on Sunday. So Stanford and Texas State will meet coming up at 10 o'clock Eastern tonight, less than an hour from you and I talking to each other right now. If Stanford wins, they will host the Super Regional against Maryland or UConn as they duke it out in College Park. However, if Texas State wins, it does appear that UConn, if Maryland loses, meaning the Huskies defeat the Terps, it does appear that UConn is going to go to San Marcos. You said that's something you heard on the broadcast earlier today.
I did, and it was more of a, we assume that's what's going to happen.
Okay.
Texas State, of course, still has to put in to host, as you do if you're not a number one seed, but because Texas State is the higher seed, if they put in to host, they would most likely get the opportunity to do so. And in my thinking, and I think you agree with me here, Shaz, Texas State hosting a regular three-game series against one team, that's not out of the realm of possibility for the folks in San Marcos.
No, and I think their facility is, I know UConn has a strong facility as well, but if I remember correctly, I think Texas State, because a team that was living in the top 25 for a lot of the year, they do have some pretty nice digs down there in San Marcos. So it would be I think, ideal circumstances for them. Certainly, if they're able to knock off the Cardinals tonight to be able to get that opportunity. It always gets a little bit hairy when the non-number one seed wins, and then you've got to figure out how the Super Regional is going to be determined because there's a bidding process that takes place again. If there is a seed that is seated higher than the other, then yeah, it's an easy decision. But UConn and Texas State would both be the two there. So we've got that in the top
UConn would be
right.
The three.
Yeah, UConn being the three. You're right. Beg your pardon. That would be the top right quadrant on the right side of the bracket to determine who would go to Omaha. Chapel Hill, North Carolina, was able to come out of the loser's bracket after losing a game against VCU. They defeat Georgia on Sunday morning, come back, beat VCU on Sunday night. More on that and Scott Forbes' run. He got ejected, missed those two games on Sunday. Connor and I will discuss that coming up, as well as what went on in Tennessee with the absence of Evan Russell and how that blew up on one particular broadcast. Some reckless reporting that have been done, so I want to get Con's opinion on that. But Chapel Hill, UNC, will host if Arkansas beats Oklahoma State. The Pokes, if they win, they would be hosting North Carolina. So waiting on the final there. Southern Miss knocked off LSU coming out of loser's bracket. They will host in Hattiesburg over Ole Miss. These two teams played to a Game 7 last year in the regional round. So a lot of familiarity for the Rebels, who knocked out Arizona. We'll have a little bit of a tease there in terms of Ole Miss getting into this position. Just how shocking, how stunning it might have been. And then Auburn and Oregon State is squared away. This will be the Corvallis Super Regional. The Tigers just running roughshod. The first SEC team ever to score 50-plus runs in their regional of three games. Through three games in a regional, they just destroyed the competition in Florida State, UCLA, and Southeastern Louisiana. So that'll be in Corvallis. Auburn, the Tigers, going up to take on Oregon State. So with that said, Con, we've set the table. Again, most surprising, most shocking to this point, I believe you and I both agree, that team resides in Oxford.
Yeah, they certainly do. I mean, first of all, let's talk about the weather in Coral Gables this weekend. Holy smokes. And they had another rain delay today. They were supposed to start this game, I believe, at 1 p.m. Eastern, and they started it around 5. So hat tip to the folks in Coral Gables for getting this done. But Ole Miss, coming down to it, gets into the regional final. They knock out Miami, the host seed, the first national seed, I believe, of the top eight to be knocked out, and maybe the only one, I believe, as we continue on right here, to be eliminated at this point. There's one more possibility with Stanford facing off with Texas State. But yeah, they're the only top eight national seed that's been knocked out in the regionals, and Ole Miss did it. And then in a rematch of last year's fight against Arizona, which saw the Wildcats advance to go to Omaha, Ole Miss finally got the upper hand over the Wildcats.
Swung Georgia on, ground ball right side. Elko with a short hop catch, flips to Washburn. He steps on the bag, and the Rebels have won the Coral Gables Regional, knocking off Arizona in the final game, 22-6. You gotta love it. Hottie tight.
Yeah, you certainly gotta love it. That's David Kellum there, excited, exuberant, on the Ole Miss Sports Network. Hottie toddy, the signature call for Ole Miss, and Rebels fans are celebrating, certainly, in Coral Gables. And now they got to make the trip to Hattiesburg, where, Shass, I mean, that's a bit of a shocker. Southern Miss advancing out of what we thought was going to be a pretty relatively two-sided regional between them and LSU. And LSU, I watched a good portion of that game. I really think Jay Johnson mismanaged his pitching staff heavily in this final against the Eagles.
I think he did, too. He brought back Hilliard to start, who actually pitched well in the couple of innings that he threw, but he gave up, what was it, one run immediately in the first inning. It was a leadoff home run in Game 7 on Monday, and then they had to work from behind. They did score almost immediately answered. I think it was three in the first, but then, you know, Paul Gervais came in, and he was so sporadic, putting runners on. His ball-to-strike count was nearly equal. It was just a very kind of tumultuous outing, but he kept the Tigers in the game. Those two were trading runs, as they did earlier on the weekend as well. LSU had to come back from two deficits, 11-4, 6-2 after the seventh inning. That 11-4, Con, wasn't it? It was a 10-run, was it a 10-run seven inning for LSU on Saturday against Southern Miss? They put up 10 in a single frame to come back and beat the Golden Eagles. And they did so in extra innings. That 10-run inning, by the way, was against wasn't that against Kennesaw for the Tigers in the first game? And then Southern Miss, they won 7-6 in extra innings on Saturday night. So LSU was square in the winner's bracket Sunday with an opportunity to win that regional. Southern Miss then proceeded to win over Kennesaw State, over LSU on Sunday night, earned a rematch with the Tigers again, winner take all, Game 7 on Sunday. And you've got to tip your cap to that Hattiesburg crowd. I mean, the Baton Rouge people, they showed up as we knew they would, but the Pete was absolutely rocking. The smoke, the barbecue, everything on the outside. Like, it was almost like the now ECU and the Jungle in Greenville, that's an entirely different animal. Like,
you
You talk about a place that was turned upside down this weekend with the fans. I thought they were going to fall out onto the field, hanging over the outfield fence. I mean, that was incredible. But at Southern Miss, that same passion, that same intensity, maybe not quite the level, just because, you know, logistically you weren't able to just crawl over the fence the way you are in Greenville. But that fan base in Hattiesburg getting their second super regional berth now, chance to go to the College World Series for just the second time ever, first since 2009 when they had beat Florida to go there. Good on them, because it was a team that was so good the first half of the year, really struggled, nearly lost the ability to host in the back half of the season. But they've turned it on here, kind of playing their third season this year from really good to poor. And now they've found their stride again, and that fan base is getting rewarded.
Yeah, they certainly are. A quick comment here coming up on LSU mismanaging their staff. But Shaz, a couple of live updates to bring our listeners. Oklahoma has taken the lead on Florida. It's 5-3 Sooners, still in the top of the eighth. Pitching chains in Gainesville. Meanwhile, Bubba Aline just left the yard opposite field for the Terps. It's now 10-7 UConn in the top of the seventh, one on and one out. So Maryland is not dead by any means. That College Park crowd, it is sold out so far in College Park right now, and they are alive. They are putting the heat on the UConn Huskies as they try and close out and hold on to a 3-run lead up at Maryland's ballpark. So a lot of tight pitches coming up here.
Tell me how Jay Johnson, because I'm going to miss it, how exactly, where did he go wrong with the staff on Monday?
Well, okay, where he went wrong with the staff is he brought in Paul Gervais in the fourth inning. Paul Gervais is LSU's closer. It is my opinion, and others can disagree with me, and you certainly have a rightful opinion to do so. I would never bring a closer in a game where it is not a closing situation. I hate when they do it in the major leagues. I think it just completely messes with a closer's mentality. If you're a closer, you have one image in your mind when you're in the game, and that is finish the game. If you come in the fourth inning, and the game was tied, I believe, at that point, impossible to finish the game right there. You're not going to pitch seven innings as a closer. So Paul Gervais has to switch his mindset up. And as a closer, it's really hard to do that when all you've been doing all year is come in, shut down, come in, shut down, come in, shut down. And now it's come in and hold water. I mean, it's just not the same thing. And you pitch differently when you're coming in for one inning versus trying to stem the tide for a few. And that's why I think Gervais struggled a lot today. And if I'm Jay Johnson, I don't know why the heck you brought in your closer in the fourth inning. You didn't need to do so. You could have kept him in for the ninth when you obviously needed him, because he gave up the lead and lost your game and ended your season. So that's going to be a huge question mark hanging over the head of the Tigers down in Baton Rouge. And we talked about it, Shaz. I mean, Jay Johnson has a thin ice to walk on at LSU. They want to win, and they don't want to just win a regional. They want to win the whole dang thing. So a lot of question marks hanging down there in Death Valley.
He went Hilliard, Gervais, Hasty. Hasty didn't even record an out. Remember, we saw him in Hoover, and I don't think he got out of the first inning because the bases were loaded, and he might have walked one in. He walked in a run earlier today, and then Fondo, Collins, Wittmeyer, and then Raiselman. You're right. If you're going to use Gervais, you've got to hold him in your back pocket for later on in the game. I mean, that's an impossible situation. Raiselman would have been the guy that I would have brought in after Hilliard, because he's who you went to first in Hoover in the elimination game against Kentucky the previous week. So I don't know. A little bit, maybe a little too much thinking, outsmarting himself, whatever it may be. Like, Jay Johnson was just kind of rolling the dice and shuffling the deck and just pulling out, you know, one card after one card randomly, and it didn't go the way of LSU. So Southern Miss, gets a super. They will host Ole Miss. Again, as mentioned, a lot of familiarity there. Those two played, two times, I think, during the regular season. Ole Miss had won the last midweek matchup right before the end of the year. So it's going to be a lot of fun. East Carolina, love the environment, as I mentioned, at the Jungle. Just looking at some of the scores from Monday to help finish up or at least close the book on how we got to where we are with the bracket. What else stands out to you the most, Con? For me, it's the runs, just the amount of offense. And Sunday in particular, it's Oklahoma State. And I know OK State and Arkansas, they're still trying to determine who is going to move on at this moment as we podcast to you right now. It's the Razorbacks and 5-0 over Oklahoma State in the top of the sixth inning. But for the Pokes, and Josh Holliday said this after winning two games yesterday, 29-15 was the score over Missouri State. And then you come back and you beat Arkansas in 10 innings, 14-10 in a seesaw affair, trailed 8-7 in the seventh. Josh Holliday said, quote, it was the most remarkable day of competition he had ever been a part of. And each of those games combined for 9 hours and 40 minutes. Oh, not to mention in the Missouri State game, the Pokes were down 12-0, right, Con?
Yep, 12-0. And in that Arkansas win on Sunday, there were 6 lead changes, and the Cowboys had 8 runs in the last 3 innings.
I mean, this is just, you can't make this stuff up. I mean, this was bizarro world. This is just, it's unreal. You and I were texting. We met up a little bit on Sunday night, too, hit the little white ball around just a tad, and we were talking about some of these just bonkers offensive numbers. On Friday alone, here's some of the scores. Maryland 23-2, Stanford 20-7, ECU 17-1, Oklahoma 16-3, Auburn 19-7, Virginia Tech 15-9, that's tame. And Campbell, I think it was 15-8. Saturday, Georgia Tech scored 13, Oregon 18, Virginia Tech won 24-3, Georgia won 24-1, largest SEC margin of victory for an SEC team ever in the NCAA tournament. Auburn won 21-7, so Auburn outscored their first two opponents by a combined 40-14. Vanderbilt won 21-1 over New Mexico State. And then, hold my beer, that's before you even get to Sunday's numbers. And that Missouri State and Oklahoma State game, man. I tweeted the graphic again at Kyle Schatz, by the way, at SportsCon4 is where you can find Con, and at @_Cerberino if you're looking for Serbs as well. I tweeted the graphic again, just the scoring. I couldn't believe that I was able to fit it all into one like screen grab, but I don't know if anything like that will ever be replicated ever again.
No, I don't know. I mean, if it is, then we are going to be watching the longest college baseball game in the history of forever. Look, Stillwater, first of all, there was something in the water in Stillwater this weekend. I don't know what it was, but
yeah,
it was
not Stills.
It was as juiced as the balls were this weekend all over the country. But in Stillwater, listen to these numbers as we continue along with Oklahoma State and Arkansas. Right now, 143 runs and 40 homers across the 6.5 games that we've had in the Stillwater Regional. 143 runs and 40 homers. What? Are you kidding me? And then Auburn outscores all three of its opponents 51-18. And then Virginia Tech scores 46 runs in their 3 games to advance to their first Super Regional ever. By the way, Shass, I told you they were going to win. You doubted them, and you were wrong again. Hokies.
I know.
Let's go.
I know. I suck at life. All number ones win for the first time, too, or the third time ever in NCAA tournament history. How about that?
Well, they won their first game, yes.
Their
first
game.
Round game.
Yes. You said Miami was the only one to get bound. Georgia Southern, too. Let's not forget about State.
Well, top 8 national, but yes.
Okay, among the top 8 national, yes.
Yes, I should have specified that, though. You're right. Georgia Southern does lose, but we predicted that one. We saw that coming. Notre Dame, somebody pissed off the Irish, and it rhymes with Schmimitty. And it's going to be a problem.
11-7 combined score for the Fighting Irish. With all the offense we just outlined, how about the pitching from Notre Dame and just the savvy veteran play from that team that just knows how to win? Again, that's the Link Jarrett factor. And for the second time, they're going to have to go on the road because they got bent over backwards by the committee. And who do they get? They get Big Bad Tennessee. They've got to go to Knoxville. Notre Dame's ready, though. I mean, they want all that smoke and more. They're going to get an opportunity. Last year it was Starkville, the eventual national champions, because ND was the number 9 overall national seed. Should have been higher, and they had to go on the road to the 8 seed of Mississippi State Bulldogs. That went 3 games. Now they've got to go to Knoxville, having won Statesboro. By the way, speaking of pitching, Carsten Finvold
wow.
for Florida. 9 innings of relief on Saturday. 9 innings. He retired the first 16 batters that he had faced. Absolutely incredible. I heard a note on the broadcast Monday as Florida and Oklahoma was starting, which I think they started around 2 o'clock. It felt like 1 or 2 o'clock Eastern time.
They had Florida and Oklahoma today?
Yeah.
It was 1 early. O'clock, I believe. I believe it was okay. 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock, they're still playing because of that weather delay of nearly
top
9 hours.
5-3 Oklahoma, by the way.
Okay, so that's the update. The difference from Coral Gables was those games just never started. It was very Hoover-like when you and I were in Hoover for the SEC tournament, where they just kept pushing back the start. They didn't want to stop and start. This particular delay, though, was in the middle of the game in the seventh inning, tight 2-1, and Khan just gave you the update. But my man Finvold, I mean, my goodness, the broadcast note I heard was, I think it was Ernie Shore, which has relevance to us because that's where the minor league team out of Winston-Salem way back in the day used to play. But I think Shore had come in relief through 9 innings of perfect baseball, backing up Babe Ruth, and was not credited with the perfect game because he came in relief. So either way, Carsten Finvold, absolutely spectacular performance for him. My guy Jack Caglione continues to rake, and Judd Fabian is playing the best center field I have seen in quite some time. He had 2 stunning grabs earlier today on Monday.
Insane. Insane stuff. First of all, your boy Caglione absolutely pimped his latest homer, and I'm here for it all day. He knows that you're watching, and he's just showing off for you. So, you know, props to Jack Caglione. Oh, my gracious. Oklahoma State just hit a freaking bomb.
Oh, wow. You're ahead of me. You're ahead. I got to turn around and look at my television.
Oh, I'm going to get your live reaction here.
Goodbye.
Oh, my God. The 41st the 41st home run of this regional. 41.
Holy smokes. So, Griffin.
Was that McLean again? I think that was McLean.
So, Noah McLean, was it on Sunday where he hit that was insurance, right? His other bomb. Like, they had already gone ahead late against Arkansas State. But then he was pitching in that game as well. He ended up getting the win.
Yeah. He's insane, man. I'm trying to find out who just hit that homer. It was Mendham. Mendham just hit the homer. Okay, McLean is currently at the plate. That's why I got confused. But yeah, Mendham just absolutely torched one into the Stillwater evening. 5-1 Arkansas on top in the bottom of the sixth. That was insane. But back to Florida, Oklahoma. Your boy Caglione's a stud. We saw Carsten Finvold, his first ever career start in Hoover in the final against Tennessee. So obviously Kevin O'Sullivan is well aware of how good this young man is, and he's going to be a fixture for the Gators for as long as he is in Gainesville going down the road, because he has just been absolute nails when they've needed him the most. Unfortunately for Florida, they're down to their last three outs. So we'll see if they spoil Carsten Finvold's appearance yesterday like they did in Hoover against Tennessee. Shaz, I'm curious, as we see this super regional field kind of play out, who do you see that can beat Tennessee? Is it Notre Dame, or is it a more offensive heavy team like, let's say, an Auburn or a Texas A&M? Because for a while, I always thought it was the team that would have to outpitch Tennessee. But like we saw in these games against Campbell and against Georgia Tech in the Knoxville Regional, I mean, Tennessee had to outhit these guys. It had nothing to do with their pitching at all. So I'm thinking, you know, Notre Dame, despite the fact that they can really pitch, can they hit enough to stay with the Volunteers?
You've got to be able to outslug them somehow, some way. You've got to tilt the field in a way where you give them a taste of their own medicine. And you've got to do it late. That's the thing. Because Tennessee against Campbell, they were down late. And they turned it on when it mattered most. And they ran away with it. Okay, the Volunteers have been, they were tested in more ways than one, even against Georgia Tech on Sunday. That was a game I thought the Yellow Jackets were going to win. I thought it was over. I mean, I never should have thought Tennessee was down and out. I was kind of hoping for, just because I wanted to see some team actually get the bat. I want to see Tennessee with their backs up against the wall, one game away from elimination. Not that I'm rooting against them, but I want to see how resilient this team can be in this elimination setting. But they don't even give you the opportunity to be able to see it, because they turn it on, they get timely hits, they hit in the late innings, and they just make you look silly just when you think you had the game won. So you've got to be able to return the favor and have clutch at-bats, go deep into counts, dig into their bullpen. You've got to be methodical, and I think Notre Dame is the team that can do that more than anybody else because of Link Jarrett, because of their savvy veteran leadership on that team, the strong starting pitching, but also the key guys that they have that can work, that can be aggressive early in the counts. Like, they're not going to wait around, but they're going to jump on you. And late in the game, I think they're going to, you know, be able to find a way to at least give Tennessee fits, maybe, that they've only experienced just a couple of times before. Single finger salute from Jordan Beck against Georgia Tech. Yay or nay?
No, don't like it. I understand it's in the heat of the moment and he's reacting, but you've got to have more wherewithal as a college baseball player representing the number one team in the country on national television. You can't do that. I it's not respectful. There's some things that are disrespectful in a great way. I don't like it at all. I don't know that anything's going to, you know, there's not going to be any ramifications from it, but I'm not a fan of it. Obviously, Tennessee dealt with some other stuff that really was negative against them that shouldn't have been earlier in the weekend, and maybe Jordan Beck was kind of saying, you know, ha-ha to the haters, but I don't like it.
Yeah, I tend to agree. You can't do that. That's crossing the line. I'm not necessarily shocked that that happened by somebody on the Tennessee team, just because in watching them all season long, being up and close with them in Hoover, they play with an incredible, incredible amount of confidence that borders kind of that cocky arrogance, but they're allowed to, right? Because they've earned it. And they back it up, which makes that team so much more fascinating, so much more polarizing, because they are in your face, but they deliver, which allows them, enables them to act the way that they do in celebrating, from the fur coat to the pink daddy hat to the dropping down to a knee and kind of, you know, I call it the goblet. I don't know what it's technically called that they're genuflecting towards after their extra base hits on the bases. But from the eye black and the mouthing and the swagger and all that, like, it's all great because they back it up. But when you're rounding first base and you're sticking your middle finger up towards the outfield, yeah, that's where I got to draw the line. Now, I know he's a kid. I would think he regrets it, Jordan Beck, Mike Concho, but, you know, then again, I don't know, because this team just has all the swagger in the world and everything is going their way, and, you know, I wouldn't necessarily fault him if he doesn't regret it either, but, you know, to each his own. He'll look back on it years from now and say, yeah, I probably shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, he shouldn't have done that. Let's talk about the other side of the coin for Tennessee that happened the front half of this weekend that really dominated the headlines for Tennessee in the worst kind of way. So Evan Russell, it comes out Friday morning before their first game against Alabama State that he's going to miss the game, and the report is just he's out and that Vitello will comment after the game. No, he's sick. No, whatever. He has COVID or whatever. Just says he's out. So, you know, of course, the speculation runs rampant through Knoxville, through the entire, you know, college baseball nation. People are like, oh, what's going on? You know, this has got to be bad. If they would just say he's sick if he was sick, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, even you and I were speculating on what it might be. And I was like, I don't know if he's just sick. Tennessee would just say he's sick. And then after the game, Vitello just goes, no, he was sick. Like, that's it. We'll have an update tomorrow. And that was it. But the unfortunate part about all of this, and this always happens, is there were some Twitter trolls out there that one of them claimed to be associated with a Tennessee account, and they really weren't, but they changed their avatar and fooled a lot of people, and they tweeted out a very defamatory statement that Evan Russell had been suspended for the rest of the season for testing positive for PEDs, and that the rest of the team had to be tested tomorrow per the NCAA. Now, that story was false. It was not confirmed. They were just trying to draw clicks to their own account. But unfortunately, the color analyst on the Stillwater broadcast either got it handed to him or saw it and took it for canon, and he decided to read it on the air and claim it as correct, and it sent College Baseball Nation into a frenzy in the worst kind of way. And Shaz, I'm curious to get your thoughts on all this. I have my own thoughts as well, but I'll let you give first blow here. By the way, Wyatt Langford just went yard to right center. It's 5-4, bottom nine. Oklahoma up by one.
Ooh.
Yeah, Wyatt Langford is an absolute superstar. My goodness.
Dude, those two, him and Judd Fabian, too, are having a little home run derby this year. So Fabian's coming up right behind him, right? Like two spots behind him, I think, in the order. How many outs are they down to?
They're down to their final two outs. I'll give you updates after you go through your thoughts here. But, yeah, so anyways, the story breaks. Tennessee denies it. Evan Russell denies it. Evan Russell's father denies it. Turns out story's false. But the problem isn't that the story is false. The problem is the fact that a ESPN color commentator chose to run with it, not even on the Tennessee broadcast, different broadcast, and he announced it. What are we doing?
We are doing phenomenal work of trying to bounce around, hit every relevant topic with sort of an outline, but not an outline at the same time, because there is just so much to get to. Con, hat tip to you. But yes, this was, I think, unfortunately, the biggest story. It certainly dominated the headlines for the front half of the weekend until, I think, Arkansas and Oklahoma State late on Saturday night. But my word to describe this is two words, reckless and inexcusable. And I'm not here to call for anybody's job, but I do seriously have to question how this particular, and I'm not even going to give him credence, but a guy on another broadcast can take something that is sent to him from a message board, from Twitter, what have you. He's not a reporter, okay? And just take it as gospel and regurgitate it to a national audience and think that that is okay. When it is something as damaging as it could be in regards to PED, like, that's pretty serious. Like, where are you in trying to follow this up and getting another source in making sure you do enough background research, what have you? Oh, here's why. Because you're on national television calling a Stillwater regional between other teams not named Tennessee, and your number one job is to be providing analysis for those two teams that you're watching in a completely different city and state. So why are you concerning yourself with what's going on in Knoxville? It's because, and I don't know, like, maybe I'm speaking out of turn, but this guy must have had some sort of an agenda or disposition against Tennessee coming into this weekend for whatever reason. So when he got sniff, he got word of something as negative, allegedly, of what was alleged against Evan Russell, he spewed it out without even thinking twice. Now, Con, maybe you can tell me, was this person was he still on the broadcast throughout the weekend? I think he is, because I didn't hear anything else from it. I've been locked in on Squeeze Play, so I've been getting tons of Rooney and Burke and Budden and Schick. So look, the guy issued an apology. He was remorseful. He certainly will learn his lesson. The Tennessee fans had pitchforks at this dude's gates. Okay, figuratively, metaphorically speaking, some of them might have drove to Stillwater. I don't know. And rightfully so, he should have felt some heat and some pressure. I'm just shocked that such a thing, for a kid in college, okay, on this stage, he cannot perform in the opener on Friday, which his dad came out and said, it's anxiety, it's stress, it's mental pressures. Like, he came out Saturday and had said that. And if Tony Vitello had given his sermon that he did after the game, if he did that before the game, maybe this stuff wouldn't have spiraled out of control. But for whatever reason, he didn't. Whatever, that's on him. But yeah, dude, it's just, it's disappointing. And let that be a lesson to any like young journalist or reporter or anything like that. Like, you don't take stuff and run with it without following up with it, especially when it's coming from Twitter or a message. That's why you don't get your news off of Facebook or social media or any of that. This is emblematic of a larger problem in society, Con. And this guy got, and then we all had to see a young kid get dragged through the mud because of it.
Exactly. And first of all, I don't think the guy had any kind of agenda to negatively affect Tennessee. He just wanted to break news. And like some people just want to break news. But here's the thing, and you bring up the great point about his dad coming out and saying like, hey, it was a mental thing, like he had a lot of stress going on and he needed a break. Like, we need to prioritize the mental health of our student athletes. We've seen that throughout the year. You brought up a few weeks ago the unfortunate situation with the JMU softball team, with one of their players committing suicide. There's been several other student athletes that have committed suicide this year. And we need to really put into the limelight the mental health of our student athletes and prioritize it overall, you know, for as long as we can, because it's such an important piece of being a student athlete, and it's something that's not talked about and not looked at enough overall as a whole. So as a society, we need to do better there to prioritize the mental health. But here's the thing, 2 points coming up on the Evan Russell story from the broadcaster and journalist side of me, but the Oklahoma Sooners are heading to Blacksburg. Your boy wins the pick'em. Let's go.
Ooh, Boomer Sooner.
Boomer Sooner. Oklahoma Congrats. To the Super Regionals for the first time since 2013. Celebratory swig of the seltzer.
Ooh, I can hear that. Yeah, that's juicy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was good. It's a tasty little victory for your boy.
Is
Oklahoma,
it,
thank you.
Is it a White Claw Surge?
No, it is not. You're going to be buying me one after I beat you in the bracket. So,
which we can't update you on, but that's a different. That's a different
we can't, because D1 Baseball does not update their bracket challenge live. Lame. Anyways, back to Evan Russell. Here's the thing. Broadcaster 101, rule number one in broadcast school, which I never went to, but I just know this. They teach you rule number one, say the time and score more times than you say I love you to your parents. Number two, do not ever assume anything. Do not speculate on injuries. Do not assume things. And do not say things on a broadcast without knowing they are true and confirmed. And that is where this guy messed up. You cannot assume, because everyone knows the rest of that saying. I'm not going to repeat the rest of it. But you cannot assume things, especially something of that magnitude, is right without getting it confirmed by the school, by the athlete, whatever. And yes, ESPN, you know, is known for breaking news, whatever. You can't break that on a broadcast. You just can't. He took it, ran with it. It was wrong. I don't blame Tennessee fans for being absolutely irate and trying to drive him out of Stillwater with, you know, metaphorical pitchforks. Just it's just something you can't do. You cannot do that. It's just like Jordan Beck, you know, flicking off the crowd against Georgia Tech. You can't do it. It's just not something that you should do. And as a ESPN color analyst on national television, he should know better.
Yes, and Danny White, the Tennessee athletic director, basically was advocating, too, for that public apology on Saturday morning as social media began to all huddle up into the corner of the Volunteers and saying, yeah, this is wrong. So there was a lot of support coming out for Tennessee people, for Evan Russell, angst towards this ESPN analyst. So I think we got the end result we needed in terms of an apology, and you just hope it was authentic and genuine. And, you know, that's
I think it was.
I think it was, too. That's for others to decide, but it's not about – like anything in life, when you mess up, and we all mess up, okay – there's a lesson in every failure, in every misstep. It's how are you going to act moving forward, okay? Words are one thing, but what are your actions going to do? Because that is going to dictate how it is that you've moved on in a more positive way. You've learned from your behavior. So, you know, that's me from the altar, from the pulpit. But, yeah, it's funny because you had the Jordan Beck thing after. So it's like, again, this is Tennessee. This is who they are. From Tony Vitello chest bumping an umpire, Jeffrey Macias, to the stick, you know, with the sticker incidents, to, you know, Jordan Beck flicking off the outfielder after rounding first, to other announcers, you know, taking shots or taking, again, not deliberate. I agree with you, Con, but still, there is so much news on this team from start to finish this entire season. I mean, there are no shortage of drama with this baseball team whatsoever. One more thing on Evan Russell. You just brought up the mental health aspect of this, which I noted is what Evan Russell's father was tweeting about on Saturday morning. Matt McDermott for Coastal Carolina hit for the cycle over the weekend, postseason cycle. He wears, and this is just something to highlight to bring attention to. Now, Coastal Carolina is gone. They got smoked by ECU in Game 7 on Monday. But here's a cool thing about McDermott, and this is relevant. He's been wearing a purple band all season long to honor a friend that was lost to suicide. So he does this to bring, in high school, one of his good friends committed suicide. So he wears this purple band, which is, it's like a wristband, which is the color that signifies that you are, you know, supporting those who are hurting mentally. It's to help, you know, protect against suicide. So suicide prevention, suicide awareness, mental health awareness, all of those things. And Matt McDermott is a champion of those causes for Coastal Carolina, something as we bore witness to over the weekend, you know, in a very it's a very public thing when you are an athlete. We've seen this with the Olympics, you know, in certain star Olympians, like I think of Simone Biles, you know, stepping away. A lot of us as fans tend to turn our head and question the kind of the knee-jerk thing is, well, you asked for this, right? You wanted this spotlight. Like, you should be just as mentally strong as you are physically strong. And it's easy. I think that's human nature for a lot of us to question, you know, athletes and their emotional state. But but it's a great lesson in life. Again, here I am preaching that these athletes, these student athletes, whether professional or amateur, they are people too. And you never know what a single individual is going through, what they're experiencing, what is going on in their mind. And all you can do is try to be there for them, be the best person for them, to support them, to try and understand them. And, you know, for people like Evan Russell to not be able to play in a game because of that. But then you have guys like Matt McDermott who are trying to bring awareness to that and champion that cause and advocate for it. We need as many people like that in our country as possible. We would all be well better off because, again, there are much bigger things than sports. So when you have an athlete take a stance like that or take a position for something, you know, as important as mental health, you know, it's really cool. And this guy hit for the cycle over the weekend. So good on Matt McDermott.
Yeah, good on him. And just have some respect for people's mental well-being. If someone says I'm not okay, maybe believe them and just allow them to not be okay. Like, it's okay to not be okay, right? That's a phrase that's become very common over the last years as we've had more and more of a global awareness brought to mental health. Like, if someone says, I'm not okay, I need to take a beat, whether they're a regular Joe Schmo or a college athlete playing for the number one team in America, respect it. You know, be like, hey, what can I do to help you? Instead of, you know, coming for their head and, you know, possibly leaking a story about them using performance-enhancing drugs. Like, there's a lot that goes into it. And obviously, you know, the mental health piece did not come out until Saturday morning, but it all goes back to the not assuming things. Like, you don't know what's going on in a person's private life, despite the fact that, like you said, Shaz, these college athletes are put in the limelight. They are, you know, everything about them we think is out there for them to see. But, you know, up until this point, at least from, you know, all the research that we had done on Tennessee, we hadn't seen anything about Evan Russell and anxiety and anything that he had to overcome. Doesn't mean it wasn't there. It just means we weren't aware of it. But just because you're not aware of it doesn't mean that somebody doesn't have, you know, an issue or is struggling with their mental health or struggling with depression or anxiety or stress. So we need to not assume anything when we hear, hey, somebody is not available to play today. Hey, somebody is taking some time away from the team. You just need to take a beat and allow yourself to understand that you may not know everything, and maybe just check on them. Like, hey, are you okay? Like, how are you doing? Like, great example of this from personal experience. So I went on vacation for 3 weeks, you know, back in April, and I sent out an email to all of the schools that I coordinate for saying, hey, I'm going to be gone for a little bit. Here's who you guys can reach out to in my absence. And one of the engineers for Boston College reached out to me and said, hey, as a friend, just checking in to make sure you're okay. And he didn't have to do that. And, like, yeah. I was totally fine. But I said, like, he's like, hey, like, you know, I appreciate you doing that. I'm completely fine. Just going on vacation for a long time. But so just wanted to send this email out. But I appreciate you doing that. That's the kind of attitude we need to have with everything like this. Just check on your friends. Check on strangers. If you see someone that maybe doesn't look right, maybe ask how they're doing. Just a simple, like, hey, how are you? You never know. It could save somebody's life.
Amen, brother. Amen. I don't know how we can pivot or move on from there, but let's do it. Let's have some fun. So,
By the way, it's 10-8 UConn and Maryland, top eight, runner at third. Bubba Aleen is up again. Possible chance to tie the game. He almost hit one out moments ago, but it was a foul ball. And Oklahoma State, meanwhile, it's a 5-2 game, and there's two on with one out in the seventh inning. And Oklahoma State now has the tying run at the plate. By the way, Aleen just hit an infield single, got to first. It's 10-9, UConn on top of Maryland, and the Huskies have a injured player.
This was a 9-1 ball game, was it not?
Yep, it was a 9-1 ball game. It is now 10-9. Arkansas, meanwhile, has just made a pitching change. Here comes Zebulon Vermillion with the tying run at the plate. Nobody out, bottom seven. Oklahoma State, a chance to tie the game with one swing.
Part of the all-name team, Zebulon Vermillion. The home run earlier on television, they showed the cowboy hat that was getting put on naturally. The cowboy play, who was it? Mendo that had hit the bomb?
Mendo, yep.
Who, it made me think of Arizona. Now Arizona's gone because Ole Miss just absolutely took them out behind the barn today. But they had the taco hat. Big fan of the taco hat, the Wildcats. After their home runs. What'd you think of the taco hat?
I love the taco hat. I mean, I'm a big fan of the pink daddy hat and the fur coat, which, by the way, we were talking about this yesterday.
It's not getting enough run.
Where was the coverage? What, like, ESPN kept showing it on their cameras, and then, like, they didn't talk about it. The cameras were saying, here's the fur coat, here's the daddy hat, let's talk about it, and they completely ignored it. What are we doing?
Well, as I said yesterday when you and I spoke, I think it's a matter of just broadcast oversight and overkill in the mind of those who are delivering the game to a national television audience, not really thinking or taking under consideration that the audience is that much bigger. You've got new viewers. This is the postseason. Like, you can reintroduce why there was a fur coat and a pink daddy hat. Like, it's okay. You can do it without spending a whole inning on it or a half inning or more than a batter or two. But, you know, you can still raise awareness about how this thing came to be for the national audience, the new people that are watching and tuning in. Because, again, you are the number one ranked team and there is a lot of interest. So, yeah, I would have done it a little bit different. It was something you noticed. I wasn't listening as much to what was being said on those broadcasts early in the weekend. So, but no, you're not wrong. How about let's pivot to, gosh, there's just so
Scott
much.
Scott Forbes? You talked about chest-bumping umpires. Scott Forbes.
Yeah, that's what I was going to get to. So Forbes, I don't know what inning it was. It was an infield fly against, was this the VCU game on Saturday, correct?
Yes, on
I think
Saturday.
I think it was the third inning. It was early on. And this is the game VCU ended up winning because they went on to continue the winner's bracket with a chance to clinch the Chapel Hill Regional on Sunday. But North Carolina was able to win both games, knocking out Georgia and then winning over VCU in the nightcap. And they since have defeated the Rams again. So Tar Heels win their own regional coming out of loser's bracket. And they're going on to the Supers. But Forbes went out to argue what he believed was an infield fly that was not called. So in the eyes of the head coach, erroneously, an infield fly was not called on a soft pop-up, okay? And you and I, I'm ready to debate this if necessary. I don't know exactly where you stand, Kyle, but what happened was the two base runners at first and second, who occupied first and second, were thrown out because infield fly was not ruled. It was not called by the umpires. Therefore, because the Carolina base runners froze and went back to the bag thinking it was an infield fly, but not getting the benefit of the call, all of a sudden they had to sprint up a base. Guy in second goes to third, guys on first goes to second. And alertly, the VCU infielders, it was the second baseman, who dropped the ball. He had to slide. He had to make a sliding catch. This wasn't routine. He wasn't camped out underneath it. He bobbled the ball, dropped it, trapped it, picked it up, threw over to third, or threw to second for the force. Then they went to third, tagged out the lead runner, double play. Forbes, understandably, because the call went against you, was irate. The dude was hot. Con, my question to you, before we debate the merits of him getting a two-game suspension, and I don't understand what he did to get the two-game suspension, but was that the correct call on the field? Was Forbes in the right going out to argue that that should have been an infield fly?
I still don't know, and I've debated this all day because I knew we were going to talk about this tonight. I still don't know because an infield fly is to the umpire's discretion, right? So it's a very tough play to say, like, oh, they were right or Forbes was right, because it's an umpire's discretionary call, and that's what makes it so difficult to determine what the right ruling is here. I give Forbes credit for going out and arguing. I think he had every right to argue, and it's a very tough play to deal with if you're UNC because it completely changed the momentum of the game for the Tar Heels, and it's tough to really kind of sit there and go, well, you know, one way or the other, the infield fly rule was right. My bigger issue.
Oh, hang on. Dorsching might have just hit one to the moon. Oh,
he did not. No, you're good. I saw it too, and I almost reacted, and then I saw the outfielder go over and catch it, so he did not.
Yeah, you're ahead of me, damn it.
I am, a little bit. Sorry, my microphone just popped out. I'm back. My issue is not with the infield fly rule being called or not, whether it was right or not. Okay, shrug emoji. My issue is more with the suspension. By the way, we should bring up, they took the run off the board for Maryland. It's 10-8 because they ruled runner's interference with Bubba Aline running inside the baseline and pummeling over the first baseman who caught the ball to record the out at first base. So they ruled him out at first. Injured first baseman, and because of they called runner's interference because he ran on the inner part of the bag or inner part of the baseline, the run doesn't score from third and he had to go back and UConn just got out of the inning.
Jeez.
So because Aline decided to run on the inside part of the baseline, which is not his line, he's supposed to run on the outer part of the bag, he was ruled out for runner's interference and Maryland does not get that ninth run. It's 10-8 going to the bottom of the eighth and Maryland fans are livid right now in College Park, but he ran on the inside part of the bag. I mean, that's not his part of the bag to run on.
Yeah. All right.
Anyways, Forbes. Let's talk Forbes here because, like, okay, first of all, here's why he got suspended, at least from what I understand it, because I know you said you weren't sure why. He apparently bumped the umpire and made contact with him, but the rule that was pulled from the NCAA rulebook says if a umpire says, hey, you need to stop arguing after you've been ejected, and Forbes had already been tossed at that point, but he came back out and continued to argue. There is another discretionary rule given to the umpires that they can say, hey, if you have been arguing for too long and we've said stop and you continue to argue, they can automatically suspend you for two games. So that's why you see in that video that Scott Forbes is continuing to argue and then all of a sudden the umpire puts up a two with his right hand. That means automatic two-game suspension. Goodbye.
Yeah, I get the discretion of the umpire for both the infield fly and also whether the two-game suspension should be implemented. I watched a couple of different videos, and I didn't see where there was any physical contact. I know that that was kind of alleged on Twitter. I'd seen people say that he initiated contact. I think the first base umpire, who was really in the center of all of this, was kind of baiting Forbes in a lot of ways and kind of inching up belly to belly a little bit too close to Forbes, and almost, I think, kept Forbes going and kept him kind of in this argumentative mode that he was in, because I agree, he went way too long. You know, you got to give up at some point. So, like, it was excessive, and for that alone, okay, I can see the two games if you're going to hold up the two fingers and signal, because if, in your opinion, he has gone too long, and if me as a viewer, he has gone too long, and I have no, you know, pony in this race at all. I'm not a Tar Heel guy. So I understand the outrage from everybody representing the Carolina Blue. You don't have your guy. Now, it didn't matter. You went out and won the two games anyway. You won your regional. All is well, right? This is all a moot point. We're more or less trying to concern ourselves and parse through the reasons behind somebody getting a two-gamer. I don't know. I tried to read his lips, too. I just think he went on too long. He was trying to be diplomatic about it, but I think it was just excessive. I do wonder if the umpire creeped up a little too close to him that continued to set him off. And then the infield fly rule, I'm glad you don't have a stance either way. I mean, your stance is it's up to the discretion of the umpires, and I completely agree. And from my view as a fan, there's no way in hell you call an infield fly on that particular ball. Absolutely no way. Nobody was camped up underneath it. It wasn't hit high enough. It was quick. It was a little flare. Like, that is not a traditional or typical infield fly type scenario in my mind. So I think VCU was the beneficiary of the right call in that moment.
Yeah, I mean, right. I agree with you there. Again, I don't have the opportunity to really say one way or the other. My issue is more with the suspension. Here's my issue with the suspension. Yes, that rule is in the book, but I've never seen an umpire go to it, ever.
Yeah.
So, like, there are some, it's like the Constitution, right? There are some rules in the Constitution or some amendments that really are just outdated that need to be removed. Like, what are we doing? Are we giving the umpires just an easy way out to be like, oh, you know what? I'm done. Two-game suspension. Like, I get it. He was arguing for a long time, but there have been plenty of more irate coaches arguing for much longer, a la Tony Vitello, who didn't get a two-game suspension right away, right? Vitello only got suspended because he chest-bumped the umpire. And I agree with you. Forbes did not touch the umpire, as far as I can see, in any way, shape, or form, a la what Vitello did to get himself four games. So I'm a little confused there. The infield fly rule, I'm going to throw caution to the wind and say whatever. It is what it is. I take issue with the suspension because you lost your coach and possibly for the rest of your season if you don't come out of this regional. Now, they did, thank goodness, for UNC. But,
yeah,
you know, you could have ended your season without your head coach for your final two games of the year, and that would have been very detrimental to UNC and would have basically put the Tar Heels on a war path to join their brothers in Raleigh to try and make their way to Omaha next year, because we already talked about how Elliot Avin is going to have NC State with fire in their eyes from day one.
Kirk Sarlous of TCU. By the way, we did get the Schwash Bowl. We got one version of it on Sunday. We were deprived of the first opportunity. Yeah, and Texas A&M ran away with it in the final innings. It was very entertaining for a moment there, but the Aggies won. They clinched the Super. And who do they get? I'm trying to pull back up the bracket here. I just got so Louisville. Many freaking tabs open in front of me right now.
Yes, they got Louisville.
Yeah, they will get Louisville. But Kirk Sarlous of TCU, he got hit with a two-game suspension after their first game against Texas in the Big 12 baseball tournament. So he missed two games immediately following that. I think it was one.
Oh, my God.
I think it was one still in that tournament and then the first game of the regional. What happened?
Justin Campbell is in for Oklahoma State.
Yes, he is. So we are seeing Friday Night Aces galore in pivotal moments. First, it was Connor Noland in what ended up being an Oklahoma State win on Sunday night over Arkansas. Cooper Jerpy came in and shut the door on Vanderbilt. Poor freshman pinch-hitting Commodore was struck out to end the game in Corvallis. And now we've got Justin Campbell in. I can't see the what inning are we in, Con?
Top 8, 5-3, Arkansas on top because Dorshing missed a home run by about 25 feet.
Okay. So Arkansas is ahead, so Justin Campbell is coming in to just be the stopper at this point. You can't allow any more runs, and with the amount of offense we've seen in Stillwater, I would like to think, what inning are we in?
We're in the top of the eighth. There are now officially 146 runs and 40 homers in six games and seven innings.
I like the Pokes' chances here, even down two. Even down two with six outs to go. They've got two more at-bats, but they've got Justin Campbell on the bump, and I don't know if the Hogs are going to be able to muster anything together again. This is a brilliant move if it works, right? I mean, you're turning to the one guy. Yeah.
Go all out. This is it. I mean, he could pitch again on Friday in the Supers in game one. Who cares? It's Monday. You got to go for it. I love it.
What's the I'm trying to think of the actor in The Waterboy, but you remember was it with Brent Musburger, who's in the booth with Brent, and he kept repeating, last game of the year, Brent, can't hold anything back now. And then finally, after like the 10th mention, he's like, we know.
Yes.
Oh man, great.
Phenomenal sports movie, by the way. We've talked about sports movies on the pod before. Phenomenal sports movie, Waterboy. It was on this weekend. I watched a little bit for like 20 minutes.
Yeah, one more note on Arkansas-Oklahoma State. I mean, we could spend an hour and a half on these two teams. I think we've been talking over an hour so far. Hopefully this is somewhat entertaining or informative for you, the listener, when you get this to your feed on Tuesday. Again, spoiler alert, we still have some super regional bids to give out as I try to find the correct tab. We're set on Tennessee, Notre Dame, ECU, Texas, A&M, Louisville, Virginia Tech, and now Oklahoma. And then on the right side of the bracket, still determining Stanford or Texas State. They'll be playing at Sunken Diamond here momentarily. Actually,
they're underway.
Just underway as Con and I podcast late on a Monday night. Maryland and UConn still being decided in College Park. UNC has moved on. They will have the winner of the Stillwater Regional, so either Oklahoma State or Arkansas. Hogs up by two in the eighth inning. And then Southern Miss takes on Ole Miss, Hattiesburg Super, and then Oregon State and Auburn. That'll be a Corvallis Super Regional. That's four SEC teams by my count. I thought we were going to threaten to get six or seven. Let's see, Auburn, A&M 2, Ole Miss 3, and Tennessee 4 with the potential for a fifth with Arkansas if they're able to hang on. But here's the thing from that game, the one that just went completely off the rails on Saturday night, Con, was that eighth inning for Arkansas where they scored 8 runs. They went on to win 20-12. They scored 8 in the eighth and 4 more in the ninth. So let's see, it was 10-8, Oklahoma State in the eighth inning. Arkansas scores 8. And here's the sequence. How about this for a five batter stretch? You had a Caden Wallace walk. You then had a Michael Turner walk. Chris Lanzilli gets hit by a pitch. Robert Moore walks. So you go walk, walk, hit by pitch, walk. Then what happens?
Grand slam.
Jalen Battles, grand slam. Yes. Unreal. Like you can't make this stuff up. You can't script it. You cannot script it. I'm trying to look at the notepad and just empty it out here to see if I've missed anything. Dorsching did have the grand slam against Missouri State, a part of that 29-14 game. That was the moment, according to Holiday, where it really flipped things. Again, Pokes were down 12-0 against Missouri State on Sunday. They win 29-14. They were trailing 8-7 against Arkansas on Sunday in the seventh inning. Roller coaster ninth. They come back and win in 10 innings, 14-10. Rock Riggio, who has been absolutely out of his skull this weekend, entering Monday, was hitting .591 in the regional, 4 home runs, 16 RBIs entering Monday. My favorite piece of video turned GIF of the weekend, and I told you about this, was him tight roping around third base and taunting in the
Saturday
game.
That's not a tight rope. That's the Jack Sparrow run.
Oh, that was the Jack. Okay. Well, that is actually more accurately put. Yes. I was trying to figure out, like,
have you not opened TikTok yet again?
No. No.
Oh, my God.
Is this a thing?
Yes. If you went on TikTok, you would see everybody doing the Jack Sparrow run. For some reason, that's now a thing.
Yeah, well, because it's everybody clamoring.
It's the latest viral trend. Yeah, it's the latest viral trend.
It's everybody clamoring in support and just coming to the feet of him because of, you know, the recent trial. So, you know, I get it. I get it. But somebody retweeted the GIF, and it was Riggio doing the Jack Sparrow, and then they put, celebrating our way into the elimination Sunday round or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Because that was when Oklahoma State was in control, but then they ended up blowing it. And yeah, there was some good stuff over the weekend for sure. Good chuckles. So
a few other things that I got on my end before we head to we head to a different diamond of sorts and talk about that. Tennessee program record 56th win of the season. Wow, they're just incredible. Air Force, hat tip to them. First regional win since 1967, and they made the final before Texas took them out. Great scene after the game, by the way.
Yeah,
Texas and Air Force, the Longhorns were saluting Air Force. They each one of them went out and took the time to actually greet, chat, handshake, fist bump all the Air Force players and tell them what a great run they had. Good on them. Good on TCU, Jim Schlossnagel, by the way, taking the time to hug every one of his TCU players after A&M took them out in the regional in College Station. Good on them for that. Last note, ECU's Bryson Worrell and Auburn's Cole Foster, each homer from both sides of the plate in the same game on the same day, and Auburn's Foster does it in the same inning, in the first inning, in that 11-run onslaught for the Tigers.
Worrell had a green light 3-run blast as part of an 8-run 7th inning for ECU against Coastal on Monday. I don't know if that ball has landed yet. I don't know the logistics or the geography of of LeClaire, so I don't know what direction that ball went in, but I would assume somehow it found its way to the Outer Banks. So he absolutely destroyed that ball on a 3-0 pitch. Timmy Elko had two blasts today in one game. The legend of Tim Elko for Ole Miss just continues to grow and grow. The man is just a tank. And Ivan Melendez, what is his home run count? Did he homer over the weekend? Because he's chasing down the single season record. I'm trying to pull up to see what he is listed at right now. Where's my home run counter? Melendez. This is great podcasting. So he's at 30. What's the record, Con?
I'm gonna get the record book up.
It's okay if you don't.
I've got the record book. Give me a minute. I've got the record book on standby. So give me a minute. I'll pull it up. But you keep proliferating on pontificating on how much you love Ivan Melendez.
Yeah, I do love the Hispanic Titanic. By the way, he embraces
it's 48.
So. Okay, it's okay. Well, that ain't.
It's Pete Incaviglia for Oklahoma State in 1985. He hit 48 in 75 games.
In what year?
1985.
Okay.
And for his career, he has the career home run record in the NCAA with an even crisp 100 in three seasons, 213 games. That means he nearly had one home run every two games in his entire career.
Unbelievable. Okay. Let me just look at the bracket, see if anything else stands out. Gosh, we'll give you super picks by Friday.
Yeah, I need time for this. I need to analyze. Oh my god!
I mean, this
is going to be so fun, dude. A super regional weekend is going to be such a blast.
I'm taking Notre Dame. I'll tell you that much right now.
I know you are. I might too. Spoiler alert, I picked Tennessee to win it all in my D1 baseball bracket, but. I love the matchup. I love it. I think it's going to be phenomenal. Tennessee's going to lose once, at least.
Yeah.
They're not going to win the first two. I know we said that last week, and it didn't happen. It almost happened twice. Campbell and Georgia Tech had leads on Tennessee. They blew them, but they had the leads. Georgia Tech in the 9th inning, by the way, and then Tennessee scored 6 in a row and said, oops, bye-bye. I love the matchup, though. I think it's going to be a phenomenal super in Knoxville.
So, again, three spots still up for grabs. We've got 13 teams who are going to the super regionals that we've got currently slotted in. So, trying to determine Stanford, College Park, and the Stillwater Regional. And, I've been down on Virginia Tech all year, but, hey, man, kudos to you. First ever super regional. I haven't believed in you. It's become a bit. It's just I'm anti-Hokie. I don't know, for whatever reason, but John Scheff, I mean, my guy, he built up Maryland, took the Terps to their first ever super regional left Maryland to take the job in Blacksburg, and now he's got the Hokies in the same exact spot, their first ever super regional. I mean, this team is legit, but they're going to go up against Oklahoma in Blacksburg. Sooners, first super since 2013. I mean, that is going to be juicy. So is Texas A&M and Louisville. Whole left side is determined. Still a couple of matchups on the right side. But yeah, my early thoughts are Notre Dame. And I think you made the comment before the weekend, Con. ECU, this is the year for them, going to Omaha for the first time ever. I'm leaning with you also, as they'll have Texas coming to Greenville.
Yep. I think ECU didn't matter who they were going to get. I believe the Pirates will finally make that famed trip to Charles Schwab Field with Cliff Godwin at the helm. Tennessee Notre Dame, I need more time to analyze. But yeah, that's my only comments on super picks right now. I need a lot more time to look at the rest of the bracket to figure it all out. Should we think
Auburn flamed out in Hoover, one and done. You know, that they're now two right? wins away. Two
Ole Miss,
wins away.
One and done.
Yes, one and Ole Miss, one and done, also a number one team at one point, okay? And they just completely fell off the wagon, turned it on late. Good on you, Mike Bianco. Phenomenal job for the Rebels, down but never out to get to this position. Dylan DeLucia was spectacular on Friday night. I think it was 12 strikeouts, career high for him. For him to be in this spot, and then for them to get Southern Miss. I mean, just regionally, just a tremendous matchup. That is going to be really cool, seeing those two duke it out. But for Auburn, a team that was 25-27 a year ago, one and done in Hoover, for Butch Thompson to get the Tigers to this position, now going to Corvallis, just amazing storylines all around. UNC two wins away. They'll have Oklahoma State or Arkansas. The Hogs, you know, think of how much that fan base was down on them and the way that they underperformed, especially down the stretch, holding the SEC West for all but one day on the regular season, either outright or had the share and then lost it to Texas A&M. Oh, they're holding steady here, up two, but we'll see what happens. And
I cannot believe that I decided to doubt Dave Van Horn in the postseason.
Never.
Dude, here's how bad it is. My bracket is busted if I have Oklahoma State lose here. I have them in these College World Series finals against Tennessee.
God.
Yeah. This is like, I'm sweating right now. Like, this is it. If Oklahoma State loses, my bracket is over. I'm buying you a surge. Like, it's done. Because I have Tennessee winning it all over Oklahoma State.
That surge so, will, yeah, I gotta pace myself, man.
I know.
What do you want, Hayes?
I'm talking
to my dog here.
No, I know.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside. Repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Should we go to a different experience hitting the little white ball around for both of us?
Yeah, shall we? Can we close up shop? Because I got a pack. So you take it from here. Where are we going?
Yeah, so you and I spent some time together on the golf course last night. You very kindly allowed me to enjoy some late-night golf at Winding Creek and try and improve my golf game a little bit. You gave me some great pointers. But we ran into arguably the most peculiar experience I've ever experienced on a golf course. I mean, I still don't really know what exactly happened. But basically, we were kind of coming up on, I believe it was the 10th green.
Yes.
And there were these little kids on the green, not with their parents, like just by themselves, shoes off. Some had shirts off. Some had one even had his shorts off. And we're kind of sitting there as we're walking up going, what is going on? And these kids are just standing on the green. And you very expertly, you know, kind of walked up and said, hey, what are y'all doing here? You know, and let them know, like, hey, you guys are trespassing here on private property. You need to leave. And they eventually did. But I don't know. I've never experienced anything like that before on a golf course, of all things.
I never have either. I really didn't know what to do. It's one of those jarring experiences in life. Like you see something and you're like, is this real life? Is this going on? Like, how do I respond? Like I didn't take a class on this. There wasn't, you know, a 101 training on how to get random degenerate children off a greenside bunker and a green and get a flag out of their hand as they trespass and deface potentially the green. I've never come across that situation. Like I hit my approach shot. For all I knew, it was a blind shot too into the green. I could have scoped one of those guys, could have sniped them and killed a kid. Now, fortunately, I didn't kill a kid. I missed the green, which is not a surprise. So fortunately, I was true to form, okay? From like a buck 80 out, I went long and to the right. But I come up over the hill, which I was blinded from, and I see like a reincarnation of Lord of the Flies. And I'm like, what in God's green earth is going on here? Can I help y'all children? And then the children get combative, and I got to walk to, you know, I tell them they got to leave. They apparently came up through like a nearside creek or river that's buried in the trees. So, you know, again, no parents involved. They're just, you know, degenerate kids who are up to no good, who need more of a family or a parent in their life to keep them out of mischief. But these kids are on their own doing weird things late at night, 7:45, 8 o'clock, whatever it was. And hell, it was probably 8:30. It was close to dark at that time.
It was 8:30. Yeah. It was
8:30. And, gosh, I mean, the ringleader, who couldn't have been older than 10, maybe 11 years old. I'll give him the benefit of an extra year, although he was a little man, like tiny. He hadn't even sniffed a growth spurt yet. He had some choice words for me as I didn't chase them into the woods. I just kind of calmly walked towards them to make sure that they kind of skedaddled quickly.
And right, then, you work at the golf course. You're just trying to protect your course. Yeah,
that's all I'm doing. That was a fun conversation when I called the club pro today to mention that to him. I'm like, hey, this happened. And he's like, oh, wow. I don't know what I can do. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know what you can do either. I'm just letting you know. But anyways, as the kid runs away with the rest of his posse, yeah, he swears at me, cusses at me, and says, you know, F you, bitch. So, yeah, it was interesting. So.
Yeah, well, interesting way to slap the E on this podcast here at the end. But
yeah,
that was
I censored the front half.
Yeah, that was one way to describe that experience. It was wild. Appreciate you letting me come out and swing the sticks with you a little bit late at night. It was great to get some expertise from you. Certainly helped as I broke in some new clubs that I acquired recently. Hat tips on the way out. Shass, why don't you get us started here, boy?
Yeah, so I'm leaving. The plan is 7:30 a.m. when this podcast hopefully is on your feed and those, you know, early risers are listening to the dulcet tones of one Kyle Schatzberger and David Kahn, that I will be on the road by 7:30. Getting my daughter. It'll be me, Pudge, and Hayes, Sir Hazleton, my black
lab. You're bringing Hayes? Oh, baby.
Yeah. Hayes is going to be in the car for 10 and a half hours. And, oh, God. We're going cross country, driving to the Chicagoland area. So south suburbs. Hope to be in Homewood by 8 o'clock local time. You know, after a couple, you know, a few stops. So you got to be careful with the 6-year-old for sure. But Pudge is a trooper. It's not her first rodeo. She's been through this many times, and we did this trip exactly a year ago with Hayes, and all went well. So you know, my hat tip jointly would be, you know, 5-hour energy and Copenhagen for sure for helping me to get through tomorrow and all your other appropriate roadside snacks like chocolate-covered peanuts, almonds, David sunflower seeds, whatever it may be, MetaRx, you know, nice, healthy meal replacement bar, and might get like a little Core Power too, you know, maybe a Monster to help supplement. But yeah, I'm real big on the treats, try to be healthy with it, but, you know, inevitably you're going to have some gross things. And by gross, I mean chocolate-covered peanuts, trail mix. I don't mean, like, churros or gas station hot dogs or things like that. Because as soon as I get there, I'm hoping I can just devour, okay, some tavern-style pizza. And if I can get there by 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, I should have a pizza weighed on me immediately. Square cut, tavern style, thin crust, Chicago pizza, the way it shall be. Give me some Aurelios injected into my veins. I'm going to eat a whole fiesta, at least half of it, which would account for about 20 pieces tomorrow night when I arrive. So I look very forward to that. The first of 8 straight days of eating pizza every single day, my friend.
Love it. I love it. Have a great time in Chicago. We will miss you this week, although I will not be here as well. By the way,
you're going to Missouri. You're going to Missouri. When's your flight?
Flight is at 10:30 tomorrow morning. I will be on the way to the airport by the time this hits your ears tomorrow on Tuesday morning. By the way, Texas State 1-0 over Stanford. Stanford, by the way, all 5 of their opponents have scored first in all 5 games of the regional. So don't take that too heartily, if you are a Stanford fan. They have come back before, and they can do it again. It is 1-0 Texas State, though, early in the regional final. Other updates, bottom 8, it's Arkansas 5, Oklahoma State 3. Cowboys have the tying run at the plate. Meanwhile, UConn has a 11-8 lead, top 9, 3 outs to go to advance to the Supers, and they would have to travel, supposedly, to either Stanford or San Marcos to face Texas State. My hat tip, by the way, and yes, I'm going to Jefferson City. Very excited for that trip with the crew of Drew Brackett, Paul Roper, Michael Coulter, Zach Jewell, Edward Foster, and Savannah Ford, along with
work
Cindy
trip,
Johnson,
baby,
and Cindy Johnson from our Lexington office as well is coming along. Going to be a phenomenal trip. We're all excited about it. We just got the itinerary today. A little 6-hour float trip coming up on Wednesday.
Lazy River.
Dude, just submitted the requests for libations. It's going to be awesome. Mm. Very excited about that. Danielle Brower and the entire JC crew have been phenomenal planning all of this stuff. We've got a great dinner planned Tuesday night. And then Wednesday, we're slumming it in the cabins and on the river. We're excited about all of it. Going to be great. Excited to see the JC office and all that Jefferson City, Missouri has to offer, and maybe pal around St. Louis for a little bit on Thursday because we have a late flight, 4:40 Central Time there on Thursday. Flight tomorrow gets in at 11:30 Central Time in Missouri. So you and I will actually both be in Central Time for a good portion of this week. So that's interesting to note there. My hat tip, though, also relates to Pudge, funny enough. Shaz, if you remember, when you hosted a cookie dough sale for your daughter, and you put it around the office, and a few of us did buy some cookie dough because who doesn't love cookie dough? I mean, screw salmonella. I'll eat cookie dough all day. But
hell yeah.
Admittedly, I forgot that I had the cookie dough. It's just been sitting in my freezer since I got it. And I was cooking dinner last night late because we got home late from the golf course. And I look in my freezer and I'm like, oh yeah, I've got this like cookie dough. Like I should make these. And so I'm ripping out this cookie dough. And it's frozen solid, so I've got to like wait for it to thaw a little bit. I kind of put some in the microwave and then kind of ripped it apart with my hands, you know, Hulk hands right here. And so I just kind of, you know, rip pieces of it apart and bake a little sheet. And it takes like 10 minutes in the oven, 325, super easy. And oh my gracious, my house smelled like peanut butter for the rest of the night. And those cookies were ooey, gooey deliciousness of peanut butter cookies. My God. So my hat tip is to your 6-year-old Pudge and your cookie dough. Thank you very much.
I'm glad you enjoyed it, man.
I'm eating them right now, by the way. I have 3 more on my plate that I'm going to devour before I go to bed.
That's quite the treat when you forget about the treat that you have and then you discover it and then it becomes a treat again. So that is quite the delicacy in life when that happens. I will say, yes. That was a freaking experience when I had to secure the bag and get that dough.
yeah, that's right. That's right.
Because the supplier just didn't inform us properly that the dough cutting machine, like the perforated machine that can cut them into squares, was broken and just didn't fill our order on time and told us, you know, after the fact, hey, by the way, it's going to be a couple more weeks. And this was, I was expecting all that dough for Christmas. And it's like, dude, why didn't you give us a heads up? Like, I don't care that it's pre-cut or perforated and there's a dough cutting machine. Just give me the freaking tub, bro. Like, I just want a freaking sack or bucket of dough. I will spoon it. I will claw it out. I will throw it on the cookie sheet.
Ooh, fly ball to center field. Running back to the track. UConn is going to the Super Regionals.
Thanks, Con. Thanks for ruining my cookie story. No, that's way more important. That is way more important. UConn is going. We'll see if they head to Stanford or to San Marcos. That leaves two more teams still to punch their ticket to the Super Regional as Oklahoma State and Arkansas still play on. And then you have Stanford and Texas State. So UConn advances. They win the College Park Regional. Maryland hosting for the first time ever in school history, the 15 overall seed. They go down in a Game 7 on Monday night. So spectacular stuff. Cookies galore. That is my weakness. I love it. I'm glad you can enjoy that. Serber does not have a hat tip this week. More so, I guess, it's for Stranger Things, because I think you both told me yesterday that there actually will be another season. So
yes,
that is some very good news. Serber's dad is watching Stranger Things currently. As
where
Serber
are you?
Is in the background. Where am I?
Yeah, where are you at Stranger Things? You're watching.
Oh, I'm on, I think I finished episode 4.
Okay. You're behind Serber's dad, by the way. If it makes you feel any worse, you are behind Serber's dad. He's on episode 6.
Holy smokes.
He might be on the finale. We've been podcasting for like an hour and a half. I think he's on the finale at this point.
He might be. So, all right. Well, I don't think I have anything else.
I'm good.
Do you have anything?
Dude, enjoy Tytown, buddy.
Yeah, you love Jeff City, man. You're going to have a freaking blast. We will talk on Friday. You can tell the nation all about it after we talk about these final two super teams. Also give our preview of what's to come on the weekend. So we'll be back with you Friday morning. He's David Kahn at SportsCon 4. I'm Kyle Schassberger at Kyle Schass at L_Cerberino, a purveyor of content. He will get this on the feed for you in the morning. Until then, we love you all. God bless. Bye.